What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
About a billion people around the world rely on fish as a main source of protein. But do they really know what they're eating?
One in every five fish sold is mislabeled.
Short of a DNA test, it's impossible to know if what's on your plate is really what someone says it is, unless you catch it yourself.
Who goes to a seafood restaurant with a pocket DNA kit? Because when this stuff is served up, that's the only way to tell them apart.
Fish can pass through dozens of hands and travel thousands of miles before reaching a plate. Tracking where seafood comes from isn't easy.
Unfortunately, the way that the industrial seafood system is set up now is this kind of really old, outdated, malfunctioning system where it's a long chain of custody, often from the dock to the dish.
Systems for better tracking are relatively new. Data still scarce, and economic incentives don't always align with transparency or sustainability. The result? A recipe for overfishing and undetected fraud.
How do we balance what the landscape or the sea can provide and create an architecture for the plate that mimics the carrying capacity of what the true costs are?
This episode, meet the companies, chefs, and government agents trying to tip the scales toward a more data-driven and eco-friendly fish industry.
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
So we're in Lower Manhattan, walking around Chinatown. I'm here with our science writer, Lee Hotz. We checked out a couple of fish markets. One was wrapping up for the day. There were a few more. Had a lot of different types of fish out, some living, some whole fish, and a lot of other things filleted and frozen. Inexpensive, a lot of them, especially things like salmon for less than $5 a pound.
Anything that you see that's been filleted at that price is not real. I stopped in the fish market because I was really struck by the appearance of that one set of huge fillets that they had out there. I mean, they were polka-dotted red and black and had this funny sort of big lozenge-like cellular structure. I'd never seen anything like it. And, of course, they're presenting it as white snapper. Like, who's to know it isn't, right? I was looking at a collection of reports by a conservation group, ocean conservation group called Oceana, and they had gone over some 200 different analyses of like fishing and marketing practices, and they came to the disconcerting conclusion that one in every five fish sold is mislabeled.
A large percentage of that mislabeled fish is a type of Asian catfish. It could contain heavy metals and various kinds of bacteria, while masquerading as more expensive catch like grouper or halibut. Sushi consumers also get catfished. A recent study from Loyola Marymount University and UCLA found nearly half the sushi served in Los Angeles was mislabeled.
You would think that is the best way to encounter fresh fish. Sushi is prized for, you know, how much preparation goes into raw fish, right? How fresh is it? How fast did it get to you from the market? And you pay through the nose for these things.
And here in New York City, high school students studying counterfeit sushi for a science project found the same thing.
They found, for instance, that white tuna turned out to be Mozambique tilapia, which is much cheaper. And it's a farm-raised fish. So you're paying a premium for white tuna, and what you're getting is the fish equivalent of Diet Coke. And they also were able to document that 7 of the 9 samples they tested that were labeled on the menu as red snapper, again, a premium sushi item, were mislabeled. And they turned out to be anything from Atlantic cod to Acadian redfish. And Acadian redfish is an endangered species.
All this can have bad effects, not just on your wallet, but on your health and the environment. Often the imposter fish is grown with lots of antibiotics, the overuse of which can lead to superbugs. And the sludge from fish farms can pollute local waters. So what are consumers to do? How do they know whether the tuna in their poke bowl or fish taco is sourced responsibly?
If you're an individual consumer, you're kind of stuck because, say for instance right now, many people don't get their fish, as we're looking here, in a fish market where they're fresh, they're still swimming around.
Sleuthing out fake fish requires some expertise and the right tools. One promising method is a lab test called DNA barcoding. Instead of looking at all of a fish's genes, inspectors can examine a small subset that differs from species to species. Like a barcode, this information can then be used to quickly sort one fish from another.
But that's not something that's easily available to an average consumer, even if that average consumer is a scientist. And although there's been a lot of talk about coming up with a tabletop fish sensor that you could check out the DNA species barcoding of what you just ordered off the menu, it's not available.
Thanks to the local sustainable food revolution, it's now possible to know exactly where a cage-free chicken came from. And one New York-based fish distributor is trying to become the go-to farm-to-table model for seafood.
So I'm Sean Barrett, and I'm a co-founder of Dr. Dish, the community-supported fishery of Montauk, New York.
Montauk is an old fishing town on the eastern end of Long Island. His company operates the same as a CSA box, which gives customers a share of what's growing in a farmer's field. In this case, it's a share of the daily catch. And he's using GPS tracking to provide live information about how and when the fish is caught.
It will be years from now before everyone's doing this, but in 10 or 15 or 20 years from now, you're going to hear a lot of people saying, like, yeah, if you can't track it, don't buy it.
Well, you're dealing with one of the most perishable products on Earth.
Yeah, if not the, exactly. So it's like, doesn't age well. Wines, you know, and alcohol tends to age well. But when it comes to seafood, we're on the opposite end of that spectrum. And so time is everything. And unfortunately, the way that the industrial seafood system is set up now is this kind of really outdated, malfunctioning system where it's a long chain of custody.
The concept is expanding. Dr. Dish now operates in 5 countries, and its customers include a whole host of famous chefs, including Thomas Keller in San Francisco, April Bloomfield and Mario Batali in New York, and Michael Cimarusti in L.A. We check out one of the boats, called the Flying Dutchman.
We can go on board and check
Great.
It out if you want.
Yeah. You just jump?
Yeah, you jump. Welcome on board. So, yeah, this is where it all began.
Montauk tuna is a regional specialty in the Hamptons, and part of what makes this boat special is the gear it has on board to catch them. Betty says tuna isn't always available here. It's a seasonal product.
So for like December up until about mid-June, so there has not been a tuna fish landed so far in 2018 in New York State. But you'll see all over menus everywhere, Montauk tuna, everywhere you go.
So what is it?
It's all mislabeled fish. Fishermen know that it's not real, but your average consumer just doesn't know.
Barrett thinks he can make fishing more transparent by bringing people onto the boat using technology.
This is a Pelagic Data Systems tracking device right here. So what that does is it tracks in real time everywhere that the Dutchman goes. So you'll see the Dutchman leaving out the inlet and then out to the canyon. You'll see exact places where he's going and how he's fishing. So all types of information suddenly becomes transparent to people on land that they never really had access to before.
The solar-powered tracking device uses GPS to monitor a fisherman's location at sea. When a fishing boat with this gear lands a catch of, say, tuna or tilefish, the location is entered into a public database called FishTrax. The system tracks boxes of fish through barcodes. But he says one of the most important pieces of information is where the fish goes after it's off the boat.
The seafood fraud is not happening on the boats, and it's not happening at the dock. It's once it hits land. So we should really be tracking seafood as it moves over land.
So he expanded the tracking system to include the trucks that deliver this fish.
So once a boat comes back, then it switches over to land, and then you track the land. So it's from the entire route, from the fishing trip to landing at the dock, to the delivery. So now you can have full end-to-end traceability.
It tells consumers where, when, and how their seafood was captured and processed with a QR code provided by a market or restaurant. It's the kind of transparency we've come to expect when tracking packages.
Kyle, can you grab a little tilefish?
Yeah.
Celebrity chef Dan Barber has won multiple James Beard Awards. He's also been named one of Time magazine's 100 most influential people. Sean Barrett hopes with buy-in from chefs like him, demand for seafood traceability will spread to the broader public. 30 miles north of New York City, I'm in the kitchen of one of Barber's restaurants called Blue Hill at Stone Barns. Eating here is more like an event than a typical meal. Inside the 1930s barn, once owned by the Rockefellers, you can expect to eat anywhere from 20 to 40 courses. Much of their meat and produce comes directly from the property, its neighbors, or another farm that Barber operates in Massachusetts. And their seafood?
Well, we just look for the freshest local fish. And I find the best flavor primarily comes from fish that are from these waters. Following the local currents, which means the seasons for fish, is the best way to go about purchasing fish. So we don't create a dish and keep bass on our menu through two seasons because we like to cook with bass. That's the easier way to do it.
And that's what most restaurants do.
The job of what we're doing in this kitchen is to stretch the animal, to see how many people can we serve off of that fish that we are looking at here, instead of the other way around, which is, you know, let's get the most pristine pieces and cook it perfectly and then let it predominate. I think the idea is that we should let it support the other ingredients that have less impact on the environment.
Tonight, Barber's team is preparing some of Barrett's dock-to-dish tilefish. It's beautiful to look at, with gold, gray, and white speckles.
Come on, don't be shy. No, with the fish, man. Okay, why don't you explain what you have here?
So we received all of those tilefish from dock-to-dish, and we saved the head, and we are trying to cook it in different ways.
Bastien Guillenchon is the restaurant's chef de cuisine.
And this time we've wrapped it in the skin from the tilefish. I'm opening up the fish head that was wrapped in the skin from the tilefish.
Ooh la la la. Great, now let's taste the cheek. Can you have her taste the cheek? Here, let me get a spoon.
You ready to try?
Sure. Thank you. First time eating tilefish cheek, for sure. Mmm.
That's the collar right there. Yeah, there is a lot of meat too.
That's lovely.
But it can be nice to bring that to the table as is and open it up in front of the guests and have the guests just dig into it and eat their own head.
The guests all know how to eat a fish head?
We can help them. We can teach them. It's the whole point. We can teach them how to do it.
Nobody's ever eaten like we do. Nobody's ever expected and planned a menu around 6 or 7 ounces of protein twice a day, 7 days a week. That has never happened. So I like to think about fish in the same context we think about everything here, which is how do we balance what the landscape or the sea can provide and create an architecture for the plate that mimics the carrying capacity of what the true costs are. Because fish farms are, in part, a response to the problem of overfishing. And overfishing is, in large part, a response to the way we eat fish. And the way we eat fish is, in part, a cultural problem. It's not an environmental problem, it's a cultural problem. And that's why a restaurant like this or any chef restaurant institution can help influence culture. To me, that's the greatest contribution we can make to sustainability. It's not that we're buying from the dock dish, although that's a nice thing to be doing too. But it's also that we are changing people's habits and expectations for what's for dinner.
But overfishing, international fraud, public health, these problems are too big for individuals or businesses.
My name is John Hendersheet. I am the director of the Office of International Affairs and Seafood Inspection for the National Marine Fisheries Service.
It's part of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, which monitors the oceans. And his work is to coordinate fishing practices with different countries.
NOAA has been very focused on ensuring that the U.S. market is not a target for illegally harvested or fraudulently represented seafood. Within the past couple of years, we have promulgated a very significant regulation requiring traceability from entry into the U.S.
He's talking about the Seafood Import Monitoring Program, which went into effect this year. It requires importers to report key data about fish that are susceptible to fraud, such as tuna and red snapper. The longer the supply chain, the harder it is to check and regulate. Hendersheet says programs like Dock-to-Dish work when the fish is sold directly, but will be hard to implement on a large scale.
So I would say on a smaller scale with fish that is going, let's say, straight to market or with a fairly simple supply chain, that sort of tracking may be quite advantageous in ensuring that product is being truthfully represented in the marketplace. That goes back to this notion of knowing where your food comes from. But the fact is that we consume seafood from all over the world, from many different types of fisheries where that technology may or may not be viable.
And the fishing ground is in the South China Sea, and the product is being marketed in San Francisco. It's, you know, the traceability gets a little bit blurred, if you know what I mean.
Alan Riley wrote the United Nations report on food fraud in the fisheries sector. He's the former chief executive of the Food Safety Authority of Ireland. And he says some other promising tech could help trace back the origins of the fish we serve, a few of which are used in the alcohol industry.
There are sophisticated techniques using RFID tags placed in labels of legitimate products where you can use a scanner to scan whether the RFID tag is in the label. And that will very quickly distinguish between counterfeit products and legitimate products.
And in the meat industry, Australians are using nanoparticles to ID high-end beef.
You see quite a bit of counterfeiting of this prime Wagyu beef. Australian industry have impregnated their beef with nanoparticles, and they have given scanners that can scan for those nanoparticles to chefs in some of the top restaurants. And as the chef is putting the beef on the pan, he scans it to make sure it is a legitimate piece of Australian beef.
He says the food industry is also experimenting with holograms, the same type of tech used to combat counterfeit money. But fraud, that's only part of the story. Another is marketing, like rebranding a poorly named fish to something more appetizing.
It's quite common now in Brazil to just simply make up a fish species. They invented one called Dura da Rinha, which is actually a non-existent species. And that's how it's marketed, right? It's just any fish. Most of the time, I'm told that about 60% of those Dura da Rinha are actually vulture catfish, which is not exactly an attractive species.
You'd probably also never order a slime head, but calling it orange roughy makes it sound more refined.
So if you go into a nice seafood restaurant and you see, oh, Chilean sea bass, and that's a thing that many people order. It's very nice, grilled, a little butter, parsley on the side, maybe some lemon. Well, that's really a fish called the Antarctic toothfish. How are you going to know?
In a market with as many international players as seafood, Riley says what's ultimately needed is a universal certificate of authenticity that can be routinely verified at a cost lesser developed countries can swallow.
Fish travels around the world, I think they say, 2.5 times before it lands up on your plate. So we need better methods for detecting the authenticity of fish. We also need to tighten up on the illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing. We need to see also industry stepping up to the plate to look at the vulnerability of their fish supply chain, looking at the opportunities for fraud, and ensuring that they have control measures in place to ensure that they are not buying mislabeled products and putting those products on the market.
In our next episode, Apple, JP Morgan, and Starbucks are making an expensive bet on mobile wallets. But will we ever truly abandon plastic and adopt more tech-savvy ways to pay for stuff? The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Anthony Green, Daniela Hernandez, Brian Gutierrez, and Laura Sim, with help from Lee Hotz and J.R. Whalen. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.
As the old fisherman says, one man's mullet is another man's goatfish.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.